You know this is, of course.
You had it in Paris. I can't say I have much experience with such things, but it looks to me to be a blood trough.
That would be correct.
And whose blood is contained within?
Mine. And Grindelwald's.
Welcome to this review of Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore. Part of the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast, look at the entire Harry Potter franchise.
I don't suppose you'd like to tell me what this is about, would you?
Join Garrett, Matt, and Adam as they wave their magic wands and continue this massive Wizarding World retrospective that they began at Binge Media all the way back in 2018.
I trust you all have the tickets that Bunty gave you.
Does J.K. Rowling redeem herself after the two less than stellar Fantastic Beasts scripts?
Can I ask what would possess you to make such a thing?
Is Matt still as excited about this world enough to give a Fantastic Beasts film a good review?
It's a betrayal in my heart.
How much bad press can one set of behind-the-scenes players in one film get?
We're going to need some help.
The answers to all these questions and many more, all coming up, courtesy of Percolated Media.
Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore, released April 15th here in America, budget of $200 million, with a box office gross currently of $201. And this movie was directed by David Yates, and I've said that for the last eight movies in this series. So, boys, a lot has changed in the 3.5 years since we were last in the Wizarding World. We're on a new website. We've survived a pandemic. But rest assured, there's two things. David Yates is attached to this at the directing helm, and we're back once again at J.K. Rowling's School of Witchcraft and Bigotry.
Unbelievable. Before I get to that, though, let me get into why I wanted to kick off the site with this particular review. One, I didn't rewatch the whole series, the whole Harry Potter series, or the other two Fantastic Beasts movies for this review, but I did re-listen to those podcasts. And I still say humbly to this day, Goudreau, I still think that's the best series we've ever done. So I think continuing it with this particular movie on our brand new site is the perfect way to kick things off. Now, with that out of the way, boy, oh boy, let's talk about this. I mean, in those 3.5 years, Johnny Depp's no longer attached. He's currently embroiled in a little bit of legal trouble.
Bye.
J.K. Rowling has come out as transphobic. Ezra Miller has been arrested.
Twice.
I mean, twice. This thing has gotten one piece of bad press after another. And here we are. It was supposed to be released right after the pandemic. They delayed it, and here we are. We are currently recording this on the 21st of April, getting ready to talk about Fantastic Beasts and the Wizarding World once again. Unbelievable.
So speaking of unbelievable, let's give everyone sort of a brief recap, because who knows, there might be some first-time listeners. This is my... When I say this, I mean Harry Potter is my favorite movie series. It's my favorite book series. I have not been too keen on these Fantastic Beasts movies. I've said my piece on them previously. You can go back to the binge reviews where I openly said I hated the last movie, and I never thought I'd say that about something that J.K. Rowling wrote in this world. But like all great arguments or all great podcasts, Adam sort of has a different perspective than me when it comes to sort of the inverse, where, Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, but that first Fantastic Beasts movie is kind of, it wowed you the same way that the original series did for me, correct?
Yep, you got it exactly spot on, that as much as I enjoy the Harry Potterverse and have come to enjoy it more and more as I've watched it and such, I didn't really watch any of them until they were very far into it, where Fantastic Beasts, for me, that's my Wizarding World movie. If I'm watching one, it's Fantastic Beasts. It connected with me in a way that Hogwarts directly, connected with you. But yeah, that first Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, that's mine.
Notice how we only said the first movie. So Garrett, looking at you, you're sort of the, I don't want to say you're the middle man because you're taller than both of us, but the reality is that, as you said when we did Harry Potter, it was not a series that you grew up with. It was not one that you were heavily invested in at the time. You did get a lot of enjoyment out of it, and I'm glad that you've warmed up to it and understand my affinity for it. But looking at the Fantastic Beasts movies going into this one, what were your expectations?
Oh, boy. I got to be honest. I was dreading it. You know, there were some things that did kind of taper my negativity towards going into this. One, Steve Kloves was back as a co-screenwriter. J.K. Rowling, look, the woman introduced us to the world. She brought that world to us in book form. But she is not a clean screenwriter. Her writing was a mess. Her screenwriting was a mess. I was glad to see that they brought someone in to taper that off. But they brought David Yates back to direct this. And that last movie left so much to be desired. So my expectations going in, I gotta be honest, boys, I didn't see one review going into this. I didn't see a bit of hype going into this besides the conversations the two of you and I have had and passing the trailer along and whatnot, but I had no idea what to expect, and I went in pretty low on the expectations front. But, you know, in re-listening to those podcasts, I did warm up to Harry Potter, but those movies had something that these don't, and that was Daniel Radcliffe. Eddie Redmayne, no Daniel Radcliffe. So that was a piece of negativity going in, too. But you know what? There was something else that came out in the last year or so that you pointed out to me, Matt, that I actually watched for this, and that was the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter. They did a whole thing on HBO about that, and it was very nicely done. Very nice tribute. So that leveled it off just a little bit, but I gotta say, not too excited going into the theater to see this.
The world has indeed changed, because I never thought I would walk into a movie in the Wizarding World written by J.K. Rowling with ambivalence. I'm not going to say I dreaded this experience, but I cared so little that I did not bother to rewatch either of the previous movies. I have only seen each of them once, respectively. It's not that I'm too busy, and it's not that I don't care. But the reality is, something about these movies, pardon the pun, they don't have the magic that Harry Potter does. I think Daniel Radcliffe is a big component of that, but there's a question that the first two movies have made me wrestle with, is that who are these movies for? Because they don't, how do I put this delicately? They don't have the whimsical nature, for the most part, that the early Harry Potter films did. And they don't earn the darkness that the later films did as they evolve. And as prequels, those first two had varying degrees of prequelitis. But apparently, if you're a relative newcomer like Adam, it can touch you. So for me, the big question has always been, I don't understand who this series is for, outside of the Warner Brothers executives who need to make money.
That's exactly what I thought of. It's a lot like Disney going into the Star Wars realm, right? I mean, how many Star Wars things have we had since those people have purchased that property? Warner Brothers just will not stop with this, and we're expected to have two more of these, correct?
Let's talk about the production before we get into the movie, because there is...
All right.
Warner Brothers said this was going to be at least a trilogy. David Yates said that this was in 2016, so right as the first movie was coming out, it was reported that it was going to be five films and that Eddie Redmayne was signed on for all five. Yates revealed he'd be directing all five. Oh, boy. Johnny Depp was the big first pendulum to fall. He had shot one scene for this movie, and then he was dropped. So they're like, oh, shit, what do we do now? Because Grindelwald was he's the big bad of this series.
He's the big bad of the series, and he was the second person to take that realm. And you have screamed since day one that recasting Colin Farrell was a mistake. And just to close off on the Depp part of this, even though he shot one scene, he was still paid fully because his contract stated whether or not the film was completed, he was going to get paid his full contract. Which, God, get me that fucking agent, please.
Reportedly between 10 and 16 million is what he made on...
Unbelievable.
On that one scene. But who knows if he's actually going to keep it all, given what's happening currently.
True.
So all things considered, it's like, okay, what do we do? Well, you go to a guy who makes being bad seem so good, especially if you look at those cheekbones. Mads Mikkelsen was cast to play Grindelwald, who is no stranger to this podcast. We've talked about him on Casino Royale. We've talked about him in the Hannibal TV show. We will be talking about him in Doctor Strange sometime down the line.
And they got him quick. I mean, production was shut down pretty shortly. I mean, it was, what, 3 weeks? It was less than a month. He was cast in place, and they had resumed production with it. Legal troubles for that piece of trash aside, there was a big opportunity to improve And I think they jumped at that opportunity when they got the chance.
This guy has his finger in the pies of a whole bunch of franchises, because it's not just this. Hannibal, Star Wars, Casino Royale.
Marvel,
yeah. I mean, he is a part of a lot of these. So you could have done worse with this, and I want to go ahead and spoil this right now. It's an improvement over last film.
I don't think it was a... It's going to be a state secret. Mads Mikkelsen was an improvement, both in terms of... The casting makes more sense because he's nowhere near... He didn't feel the need to do all the absurd makeup that Johnny Depp did, which has been his trademark for the last 15 years. And I buy him more as a lover of Jude Law than I would Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Less in this movie. But you're right. Mikkelsen said he wasn't going to emulate Depp's performance because that would be, quote, creative suicide. But he said he needed to find some kind of bridge. And I'm going to say right now, if there's going to be two more of these movies, just keep recasting Grindelwald. Every movie is a different actor because Andy Serkis is still out there and Mark Strong.
Don't put it past them.
Oh, I say that in all sincerity. It's a cute gimmick if you change Grindelwald.
Yeah.
Do the Blofeld thing. But you're right. The one thing that made me more optimistic than anything was the Steve Kloves coming back to rein in J.K. Rowling, basically, in the screenwriting component. He had done every single movie barring the fifth one, so he knows this world inside and out. And he had taken some time off from the series as far as writing. He produced the first two, but J.K. Rowling was the sole credited screenwriter. So I think that time off did him some good. But whether or not this movie is going to be the end or lead into two more movies will be a subject of discussion that we get to.
Yeah, and let me touch on this too before we get to the film. I mentioned J.K. Rowling's battle with the media literally 2 years after we recorded those shows, and she got some really, really bad press. And she's been looked down upon as well. Matt, you being the big fan of this series, how are you feeling about that going into this?
Well, that's why I made that off-color joke or pun based on the opening. I hate that I'm put in this position that someone who has done a lot of good for children's literature, somewhat as bigoted as the environment that she's criticizing in this movie. It's difficult for me to put them aside. I'm sort of at my... Not to the same degree, but this is kind of like a Woody Allen situation for me, or a Mel Gibson, where can I fully separate the person from the world that they're inhabiting?
Fair enough.
If you're new to this site, let me just say, when we do these retrospectives, even if it's a new movie, we go through the entire plot summary. So if you have not seen this movie, you can either go out and see it and come back, or just listen to us spoil ever lovingly details this movie, because we're going to talk about a lot of stuff.
There's so much to get into with this.
Absolutely. Before we get into it, I want to say, since neither of you did, I was fortunate enough, air quotes, fortunate enough to watch both Fantastic Beasts movies before we did this one. Once, because Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them was just on TV, and I was sitting there, and I didn't feel like turning it off. I caught it only about a quarter of the way into it, and pleasantly enjoyed myself the rest of the way. And then my lovely wife and I were like getting ready to get up and walk away when Crimes of Grindelwald started playing. And instead we sat down and we were like, all right, well, we haven't watched it since. So let's go ahead and do it again. And I'm not going to say it got dramatically better. I'm going to say that I disliked it less than the vitriol you can find me spewing like a Slytherin snake the last time we talked about it. Maybe it's because I know what happens and I can ignore some of the things that irritated me so much. Maybe I had closed captioning on and understood some of what was being said. But I still think it's probably the lowest ranked movie in this entire saga. No surprise there. But watching it the second time, I was not nearly as hate-filled. But it did not make me extremely confident going into this one.
And re-listening to that podcast, not only did we spit a lot of vitriol, but it was so depressing hearing Matt just go from the beginning of that saga so excited and at the end just be so let down by what he was seeing. I mean, it was really, really, it's a really sad thing to listen to. Sad and hilarious at the same time, I gotta say. Because when you spit vitriol, it's always the best, I think. But yeah, we all did not like that movie at all. It was a very, very scarce crowd that I went to see this in. Let's mention this. I went yesterday. I went by myself. I went to the theater right here in town. I went to like a 2 o'clock show, and I was amongst about 7 other people in our theaters. What was your guys' theater experience like? Matt, you first, because I know Adam went today.
Yeah, so I went opening night just because I wanted to see if other people had my enthusiasm, because as I said, I was not really looking forward to this, but to see how general audiences would respond to this, because the last movie did well, but it didn't make Harry Potter money. And it was about half for a newly renovated theater. There was this kid behind me who would not stop coughing the entire time. Clenching my fist, not to show my hand, but if it was a different movie, I probably would have gotten more upset.
I was going to take Jen to this, but she hadn't seen the previous two movies. And we ended up going earlier in the week. We saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is just it's totally different than
still
this movie.
Let's
just spoil that right now. It is a bonkers fucking fiasco of a film, and it was a different experience than that total crazy movie. Adam, you went today, sir. I assume since we're recording on a Thursday, it was pretty scarce.
So I went today. I went with 4 other people, and I don't mean I went with a party of 4 other people. I mean I was in a theater with a total of 4 people.
One of them was a projectionist.
But it was also, it was only 11 o'clock or 11:30, so I had to drive. I went to the next town over because my AMC here is a piece of shit theater that has matinees until 3 o'clock, and they don't start showing movies until 4. So to make sure that I was ready for this, I went nice and early. But it was a good showing. It was a great quality screen, great quality sound. So as much as I didn't get, you know, like a Dolby screen or anything like that, at least I got a really good experience out of it.
Speaking of experiences, let's get into this movie and see if the vitriol chain is going to continue or if there is indeed a course correction based on the last movie.
I do not envy you, sir, because I was not expecting a political thriller going into this movie. But that's the kind of a plot that you have going for you. Go
let's
for
see what
it,
we
right
have
man.
For the secrets to be revealed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this title is bullshit, by the way. Let me just put that out right
yeah.
now. Well, speaking of the titular character, the movie opens with Dumbledore sitting in a coffee shop amongst muggles. So he's played by Jude Law, who's returning from the previous movie, looking very much like Obi-Wan Kenobi from those prequels.
Yes. Thank you. I could not get that out of my mind this entire film. I'm glad we're going to start it right now. Yes, yeah. He is Obi-Wan.
He is Albus Wan Kenobi, basically, this entire movie. And once again, he's one of the best parts of this movie. I think it's crazy that the most faithful version of Dumbledore is the one that is not based on any of the books.
Yeah, he was pretty good in this. Not in it as much as I was expecting, but I do like the fact that they go into the relationship between him and Grindelwald. Yeah, he's very, very good in this role. Just a scarcely used actor that I think should get more work.
That's what happens if Chris Rock talks shit about you at the Oscars.
Damn it. Oh, shit. Know, yeah, I was going to say, he was a joke that then, yeah, Sean Penn threw a fit about 5 minutes later.
Should have slapped him.
Damn it.
Sorry.
Well, speaking of slapping, that team must have been slapping pretty hard, because they have basically a... So Grindelwald walks in, first time we're seeing Mads Mikkelsen, and they have a conversation about, you know, them actually being lovers. They speak in a romantic way. It's not... You don't have to infer or read between the lines. The secret is out, no pun intended. Dumbledore is openly gay. And it took this movie, finally, for them to not dodge around it like they did in the previous movie.
Let me ask, is this a make-good from J.K. Rowling after the bad press she's received in the last couple years? I took it as that, and I know I shouldn't. I know I should take this as a piece of fiction and not bring real-world views into it, but I got to say, man, it kind of feels like a make-good on her part.
It is, to an extent. It feels more out of reluctance than anything, because Dumbledore was never emphatically said to be gay in any of the books. That was some offhand comment she made in an interview. Sort of like how the Russo brothers talk about stuff that happens in the Avengers off camera. So it really shouldn't be canon, but people take it as canon. So I do appreciate the representation and that she's actually depicting it this way. But at the same time, it does feel like too little too late. especially the last movie, they danced around it so hard.
What struck me, and what I did appreciate, is, as you said, there's no doubt about it. They don't dance around it in this one. But it's 3 minutes into the movie, and it's very clear that these two are in or were in a relationship. And I was struck by it. And for me to answer the question for you, Garrett, being that it's been brought up, and it's, I think for two movies, it's been, when are we going to see gay Dumbledore? When are we going to see gay Dumbledore? I didn't take it that way, but I'm not going to put myself out as the authority on it. But, I mean, as soon as the trailer for the last one came out and we saw Jude Law, hot gay Dumbledore speak was kind of everywhere. I can't imagine the fanfic chat rooms that, you know, as soon as Jude Law had his had his look and had his wool jacket on, because as a straight man, I got to say, how you doing, Jude? What's up?
Yeah, it made me think, thank God Jen wasn't with me when I saw this, actually.
So they're talking about, you know, their past feelings for one another. They're still there. But then they talk about sort of the disillusionment where Grindelwald says, you know, we agreed that we were going to create a world of purging the Muggles, wizard superiority, and you pulled a 180 and said no. It's very much I'm going to say this a lot. It's basically if Professor X and Magneto were fucking on top of having their argumentative disagreements in the X-Men world. Those are the biggest parallels I can think of.
Yep.
Now, Matt, do they infer any of this? I mean, do they infer any of this in any of the books or anything? Because I've only read the first book. That's one thing that has happened since we did that series, is I'm kind of going into the series a little bit. I mean, I've only read the first book. That's it. But I'm trying to get an idea. Like, is this coming from anywhere, or has this literally been started since Fantastic Beasts that these two had a relationship like this?
So them being lovers, I believe, was retroactive. In the last book, they talk a lot about them being, eventually they came to blows with the death of Dumbledore's sister. That's all in the book. So all the backstory we get in this movie is from the books, but I don't think it's ever said in the books that they were romantic lovers as well. But the whole thing of them having the same ideology and Dumbledore realizing that that wasn't the best idea, that is consistent with the Potter books. And much like the Mutants, they set this thing on fire, and it looks like they've been talking in this basically Cerebro type of thing where... Because my question is, are they projecting themselves, or Grindelwald actually meet him? Because the camera cuts and Dumbledore is by himself.
Mm-hmm. It almost felt like a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't tell if he was using his pen. Is it the pensive? That he was going back in about a memory that they did have, was how I felt about it.
Yeah. And they did this so early to immediately introduce the new Grindelwald. So let's get this out of the way. How do we feel about Mads Mikkelsen in comparison to Johnny Depp?
I think he's a much more imposing character, you know, without a doubt. There's a sense of menace to him that Johnny Depp never brought his characterization of Grindelwald. His speech, his mannerism, the way that he just projected himself, I never got any fear or menace. And with Mads Mikkelsen, I feel that he can fuck a Muggle up if he so chose.
He could definitely strap him and hit him in the balls, can he?
That was real secret franchise of Dumbledore. They're
I agree with everything Adam said. I think he's definitely more imposing. Ironically, though, the weird thing is where they take this character, I think Depp could have done better with the political aspirations that this guy ends up eventually having. Because they do comb his hair like a particular dictator ruler from those 30s and 40s in Germany. He definitely looks like Adolf Hitler here. I definitely see Trumpisms going on here. I think where they take this character, I think Depp could have had a little more, I don't know, gravitas added to it. But I think Mads Mikkelsen is perfect as the imposing character that he's portrayed in at least the beginning portions of this film.
What I like, too, is that they don't feel the need to explain it. Here's Grindelwald. This is what he looks like.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that.
Yeah.
I expected some explanation that I just have to go with. I mean, it's a magic world. They could make up whatever they want for it. I appreciated they didn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Polyjuice Potion exists in this world.
Yep, Polyjuice, yeah. and something that makes it stick.
Yeah, like he hexes it or something. It's magic. You can do
whatever you want if you chose.
Yep. And if you remember, these movies used to be about a character named Newt Scamander, who we're actually reintroduced to in the next scene. Edward Redmayne comes back, and we actually see him doing zoology. He's doing his fucking job that the movies were told on. Where it's basically the Triceratops scene from Jurassic Park, where he's there, if James Cameron actually made Jurassic Park, because they off this poor creature in like 30 seconds afterwards. But he watches it give birth, gives out one egg, when all of a sudden Grindelwald's acolytes come up, one of them, Ezra Miller, coming back with Alan Rickman's Harry Potter wig for no reason whatsoever.
You know what was ironic about this? What was ironic about this was one of the trailers before the movie was the new Jurassic Park trailer. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing the birth of a dinosaur here. I'm like, wait a second here. Are we already at Jurassic Park? It was kind of ironic.
I was struck that it was that it took about 10 minutes before we got, maybe not that long, that this movie did not open with Newt. And I'm like, why wouldn't you open? But I thought about it after I got home. The first movie opens on the back head of Grindelwald. The second movie opens with Grindelwald's gate. This third movie opens with Grindelwald and Dumbledore in the, might as well call it the bar scene from Heat. You know, they're in the diner having coffee or tea, I guess, because we're in Britain. So as much as I was like, man, why wouldn't you do it? When I had to go back over the last 5 to 7 years of these movies, poor Newt Scamander has never opened his own movie in his franchise. Well, what was supposed to be his franchise, let's be honest. This is Hot Gay Dumbledore's franchise now.
It goes back to my question of who is the main character of this series? Because we thought it was Newt Scamander, and then based on Dumbledore being marketed so heavily, this movie is partially named after him. Grindelwald was named after the second movie. We thought Ezra Miller was going to be the setup to be the big villain, and that's fallen by the wayside.
Thank Christ.
For the better, but I can't. It's tough for me to get a grasp on any of these characters because the quote-unquote main character keeps shuffling so much, and the side characters, and the side characters, with the exception of one, are completely interchangeable.
It feels very, very disjointed. It feels very misguided that you don't have a set character that you are concentrated on. You guys are absolutely right. And I thought by this third movie we would get that finally. I mean, the Harry Potter series, one of the reasons why it's endeared to so many people is because not only we have one character that she based it around, but that's a character that you like. That's a character that she wrote that people can actually gravitate to. I don't see anybody to gravitate to in this series, and that is a big problem. Again, Daniel Radcliffe's presence, or something like it, is definitely missed here. I don't have anything against Eddie Redmayne. I made a crack at the beginning. I don't have anything against him. Well, maybe we'll eventually review Jupiter Ascending, and we'll talk about that. But
the one saving grace of that movie.
Yeah, you're goddamn right.
But as a part of this series, as a part of this franchise, he has not endeared himself at all to me, and I'm left very, very lost by the time this movie's over.
This movie, I feel like they've decided that they have to completely pick up and make up for the last one. It's crazy to me that these two have almost identical scores. Not to give anything away, but I'm fucking flummoxed by that. But everything about this spells like we've seen in other franchises where it's like, shit, we need to correct something. We need to correct it big time. And I feel that's what the first good section of this movie is trying to do.
Yeah, it's
definitely. And part of that being exactly what Matt discussed is, who is this series going to be about? You know, I think they've looked at it and went, you know what, a master zoologist isn't going to keep everybody for 5 movies, but Dumbledore will. And I think they're looking at what's the finish line going to be. And you're not going to have the finish line with Newt, but you are going to have the finish line with Albus, I think.
I think you will if they get to that fifth movie, but the way this movie ends, we can speculate on that. But they show up, they kill the mother, attack Newt, take the child, but turns out that there's another egg, so there are two of these chillins that are born, which are creatures that are never referenced in either of the Potter films or either of the previous movies. They're actually from Chinese mythology.
Mm-hmm. Really? I was going to ask you if they're in any of the books or anything, because they play a big part of this movie, way bigger than that.
Yeah, I'll give the movie credit. At least the Fantastic Beasts play an integral role in the story beyond just cute hijinks.
Yeah, I do like that in this one. Especially compared to the last, where we felt one or two scenes and the beast didn't matter.
Yeah, Fantastic Beasts, and they stay in their cage. Is what the
Fantastic Beasts, and seriously, where do we find them?
Credence takes the baby, is knocked out, but gets his wits back out about him. We cut to Grindelwald slitting the throat of the child, which caught me so
This was insane.
Hard. I could not. Ugh. I went, oh shit, audibly.
I did too.
I could not believe that they killed it, and then you see its body bleeding out on the pavement.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean,
in a children's film. Is this still PG-13?
Yeah, this is PG-13. Yep. But again, I don't think these movies have any sense of tone. Like, they're just...
Yeah.
At times, they're too cute for their own good, and at times, they're so... It's like the prequels, the Star Wars prequels, where they're too kiddified in some points, but then there's so much talk about politics and corruption that it's going to go completely over your intended audience's head.
And I'm not just blaming Rowling for that. I'm blaming Yates for that as well. We said it. I just re-listened to that entire series that we did. We said it in all the films he directed. His style and tone are all over the place. You can't get a beat on the guy and what he's trying to get across. And this movie's trying to be a political thriller. It's trying to be an environmentalist picture. It's trying to be a movie about Dumbledore. I mean, there are so many things we got going on here, and we can't get a focus on it because this guy is directing all over the place.
I'm also not... I hit my wall with David Yates in this movie. I like the movies he directed. I think the fifth film is the best of the series, and that movie has political undertones. In fact, the seventh movie has full Nazi undertones, so this is not new ground for him at all. But if you notice, he never uses any real natural light when he sets up his scenes. They're all, like, you can tell he uses, like, actual equipment and stuff and doesn't use much in the way of his environments. And I'm tired of that, like, sepia tone aesthetic he's got.
Oh, yeah. The color palette on this is fucking... It's bad. It's a really bad color palette. And I get what he's trying to say here, that everybody has shades of gray, but it gets really old really quick when you go that route.
Well, you know what else gets really old? Cutting back to Hogsmeade, which we've seen multiple times in the Harry Potter series. They go into the bar... They see his brother, Aberforth, who was played by Kieran Hines in the last movie. Here he's considerably younger. Go upstairs. Dumbledore's up there. Newt brings his brother, who I forgot was in the last movie. I thought this was the first time we were meeting him, to be perfectly honest. This guy looks like a British Abercrombie & Fitch model. And he's got the personality you want, to be totally honest. And Dumbledore tells them he still has that blood pact that he's had with Grindelwald. And I like how... It kind of operates like a Horcrux, where it has a mind of its own, and it'll constrict his arm.
Yeah, that was a really creepy little reveal. Like, you see it a little bit, you know, and then when it gets explained later on, you fully see what it's doing and the, you know, the way it's wrapped around. And it gives a little bit of that, of what we had in some of those other, some of the later Potter movies, where you felt that, just a sense of something, you know, some more stakes that were there, and some connective tissue that way. So I liked what we saw with that vial and with... Specifically with the wires that we saw wrapped around him.
Dumbledore mentions that because of this blood pact, they still can't... It's the wand thing from Potter and Voldemort, where it's we can hurt each other, but we can't kill one another. So we need to figure out a plan to stop Grindelwald. The plan is that there is no plan. And this is the flimsiest screenwriting I've seen in a long time, where...
I've seen this episode of Rick and Morty.
Yeah, it's Rick and Morty. It's the 14 million thing from Infinity War, where it's you're giving yourself a free pass because you're openly saying this is the only option with your story. And the second movie doesn't really have much of a plot either. This one, their plan starts out as one thing, and then all of a sudden it turns into a commentary on election fraud.
Yeah.
Among other things. The trailers give no indication of what this movie is actually about. Not that it's a bad thing, not that it's a great thing. It's a different angle. And the politics in the first movie were the worst part. The John Voight subplot was awful.
Oh, yeah. But here it makes sense. I mean, here, especially in the time frame that we are, and I'm not going to say that it's done well, but especially being that the time frame, because I know it's brought up in the books, of when the actual like battle with Gellert exists, is coming up here in a few years with World War II at its back. So if you're going to set it in that time frame, I think it'd be hard to ignore that that's going on in the world at the same time.
It's definitely with the time period, because the Grindelwald duel's in 45, so they still got some time to get there. But the weird thing is that the International Confederation of Wizards, which is this basically the governing body, and they're voting for a supreme mugwump. That sounds like something Dumbledore and Grindelwald would do in their own Chamber of Secrets.
I thought until the very end that they were just voting for a new Minister of Magic.
That's what I thought, because that's the only title that I was aware of that exists in the Ministry. Like, of course there would be a figurehead for the entire wizarding world, but apparently... There is, but there isn't. It's really confusing. Like, I'm not saying I wanted a Attack of the Clones 20-minute speech about democracy, but I think they should have just stick to what you know, is all I'm saying.
Pick a speed. this thing is just, I will say, I think overall, I think this movie is a grand improvement over the last film. Honestly, I'll go ahead and give those cards away. But I am not thinking that at this point of the movie right now. I'm just like, my God, we're jumping from place to place. And I don't even think we've seen the title card yet, have we?
I don't even remember seeing the title card except for the end credits.
Yeah, there's a title, for it to show title up.
Yeah, it took about 15 minutes for the fucker to even show up. So I'm just like, God, guys, get to it. Get to it. Get to it. And it takes a while to get there.
Yeah. So speaking of getting there, we return to New York where we see a noticeably thinner Jacob Kowalski to where I thought he was recast.
I did too.
If you recall at the end of the second movie, which I also totally forgot about, Queenie went to join Grindelwald and immediately is having regrets about it. Yep. So that entire thing was fucking pointless. And they've taken Queenie and reduced her to a crying bimbo.
Oh, God, I hated this so much. Man, she has a hard time writing female characters if they're not named Hermione.
Bellatrix.
Yeah,
she's got a lot.
This was like, terrible.
You got Hermione, you got Luna, you got Bellatrix. So it's not that she can't do it. It's when she has to write characters who are defined by their romantic interests, which Queenie is entirely, falls flat. Yeah. And she also, all the henchwench in this movie has no personality either. And that really got on my nerves because she's an obvious stand-in for Bellatrix.
She is, yeah. But I will pay a compliment here right now that when we get to these scenes, yeah, it's really tough to take the fact that she's written like this. But I will say the look of the film is fantastic as far as costuming goes. They got Colleen Atwood. Her costuming in this is phenomenal. Like the way the women look in this and the way everybody's dressed, it looks really, really good. So that's a compliment I can give it.
Could be worse. You could be Catherine Waterston and you look like a horse show up in this movie. So yeah, that's the big thing is that Tina is, they mentioned she is now head of the whatever ministry she reported to, which is how they explained that Catherine Waterston, I don't know if she had COVID or scheduling conflicts, but they purposely kept her out for some reason. Your main female lead of the previous two movies is reduced to a scene and a half. But Jacob's by himself. He's closing up the shop for the night when he sees this group of punks trying to go after this woman, and it turns out it's all a charade. So this woman is Hicks. Hicks is the character's name. Teacher at Hogwarts, but she's a teacher nevertheless. She basically recruits Jacob into coming back, and he says, I want no part of this. I'm done. And once again, Jacob is the best part of these movies. I think he's still very entertaining. There is one thing that happens in this movie that I thought was a step too far. But all in all, he's a welcome presence anytime he shows up. Because he's the only person I actually really care about on an emotional level.
The problem with him, though, and they do write something for him later on. But let's be honest, there is no reason for him to go on this journey. There is absolutely zero reason for him to be there. When they put the whole gang together to go on this mission, everybody has powers, everybody has something, and he brings nothing.
He brings heart, Garrett. That's what you're missing.
Yeah, we know that by the end. I get it. I know that's what they write for the end of this, and I will say that redeems it a little bit. But here, just getting him there, it makes no sense.
So as the person who liked Jacob and Queenie the most of all these characters, do you feel that their writing has gotten worse as this series has gone on?
I think what they did to Queenie in the last movie was pretty unforgivable, though in my rewatch, I found myself finding some sorrow for her and what she wanted. Jacob here at the beginning just, my heart went right out to him. But I've explained, Jacob is my avatar into not only this world, but I think into all of them. So I fully love what Fogler does. Who'd have thought that this would be Dan Fogler's freaking breakout would be fantastic. This and Fanboys, right?
Paul Fury.
They got Balls of Fury in this one here in the third act. I think the writing for both of them got better in this one, only because Queenie's given almost nothing to do until the very end. And I think that this entire movie was kept at a distance to try to find some way to redeem her, would be my reasoning behind why they decided to do that. The reason they get for Jacob's introduction and why he's coming along may be shallow. I didn't care. This character that they have, Lally.
Yeah.
She's a charms teacher at Illimorny. I love her introduction. I love her playing around with Jacob. And it lightens the movie up immediately right here. When they start playing around together, they got great chemistry. And even the whole, she teleports inside the ship when he tries to lock her out. And you know I'm a witch, right? She's a great presence, and they're a great presence together. I'm happy Jacob's along for the ride. Without him, I think I'd be turned off to the movie. I'm really glad he's brought into it. And I like where he goes throughout the course of this movie as well.
So they're all brought to a train that is not the Hogwarts Express.
Thought it was, but
I thought it was too.
Could they make it very, very clear that, hey, we are going to focus in on the white panels of this train, so you know it's a different color?
Well, it's surprising that what they show of Hogwarts versus what they do not in this movie. So we have this band of miscreants. So it's Dumbledore, Newt, his brother. I don't even remember his brother's name, and I've seen him for two fucking movies.
Theseus.
Oh, Theseus, that's right. Lolly, Yusef, who is a character I also forgot was in the last movie.
I forgot he was in the last one.
And I was like, oh yeah, that's right, they killed Zoe Kravitz, and he's related to her somehow. And Jacob's there, and Dumbledore says, because Grindelwald killed that creature, he now has the ability to see the future. He's got precognition. Even though he's already got Queenie, who can do the same thing.
And we had a precog in the very first Fantastic Beasts movie, Raising Credence, if we remember.
Oh, that's right. Adam rewatch these, because he remembers details that neither of the other two of us do. So because of that, they say, we can't go at him full force because he'll see it coming, so we all kind of have to do other things to make this movie reach the 140-minute runtime that it requires. So we're going to send Yusef to spy on Grindelwald, even though he knows who he is. We're going to send everyone else to where else? Germany. And just invite audiences for the next 20 minutes for a series of hijink and political intrigue. This movie is, I do agree, Garrett, it's better than the last movie. But it's still got the problem of these side quests do absolutely nothing for me on an investment level.
Yes, I became lost. And that's what I mean by lost, is that the tone of it is so all over the place, and I don't have one narrative to follow because we're going on all these side quests like it's a goddamn video game.
Which is funny because the first movie sounds like Pokemon, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah.
Which is really what they should have stuck with. You do a globetrotting movie where they have to get these exotic creatures and he has to fill out his Pokedex or what have you. Be more interesting than this. But they send Yusef away. They go to Germany where they're seeing the International Confederation of Wizards. So there's someone from Asia and there's someone from, I want to say, Brazil, that are running for this title. And they find out that Grindelwald is being cleared of all charges, even though they have clear evidence he was a war criminal and committed hate crimes. Because the current incumbent leader is not of a right mind. They don't say he's outright corrupt or he's an outright coward, which is a problem. You don't really get a full angle on this guy. It just feels very half-baked.
Yeah, especially being that he flip-flops at the end. I mean, he's... Yeah, this part... And I think it's going to be clear that I'm going to be a little gentler than my co-host here. This part bugged the shit out of me. Just because it... I mean, okay, he's being absolved of what? Why? Where was this try... Where? I mean, what the fuck did we skip? Because as we learned when Jacob got picked up, everything happened only a year ago from Fantastic Beasts 1. So we got two movies in the span of 1 year. What's going on with Grindelwald? I mean, it's just lip service to get us the next 20 minutes down the road. And, I mean, if you want to get to Nazi imagery, do it, because they do it kind of halfway. The only thing I'm thinking is... It is a very close comparison to Adolf Hitler when you realize that he tried to overthrow the government more than once, got in jail, got out on a technicality, and then was successful on subsequent attempts. So I think this is just a really shitty way of trying to make that correlation of Grindelwald being Hitler.
Yeah, and Adam, you mentioned something when we were talking about the overlength of the other films. You mentioned sometimes you shouldn't just show the entire thing. Sometimes just like a flash of a newspaper or something can get the job done just as well. And I think that could have worked here as well.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You don't need any of this other than to tell us, like you guys said, this lip service to compare it to that era of ruler. Don't get me wrong, I'm okay with the parallel. I like the parallel, believe it or not. I just hate the way it's pulled off.
Execution is really the biggest problem with this movie. It has middle chapter problems where it's like wheel spinning the movie, where we have to fill time to justify a story in a five-film arc. Because really, you look at these three movies, you would combine the best parts and make one solid movie and cut all the other stuff out. And for the record, Grindelwald has already been arrested at the end of the first movie. He was convicted. So you're retroactively saying, oh yeah, we arrested him on false charges for impersonating a police officer?
Yeah. He escaped. If you got him after he escaped, why is there even a trial again? Put him back in jail, that's all.
Why are you acquitting him? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
exactly.
So they give a flimsy excuse. The guy says that if they arrest him again, he'll get more support. But if we beat him legitimately, all of his followers will go away. Geez, somebody must really want to stick it to Donald Trump in this writing. We're going to build a wall and make the Muggles pay for it. that really should have been the...
And let's face it. Yeah, and let's face it. Grindelwald wants to start a war with the Muggles. Who's going to win that war? I mean, come on, is that even a war?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
So speaking of makes no sense, Grindelwald's like henchmen, including one guy who looks like Barry Keoghan, that was really throwing me off because his nose is all fucked up.
Yes, that's what I thought it was the first few scenes.
I'm like, oh my God, this guy, Warner Brothers must just love this guy, except when he got
between
arrested.
Between him and not Gal Gadot, I was thrown off by a couple of his henchmen.
When you are a shitty actress than Gal Gadot, you know you have no reason to do it. So Theseus gets arrested, and they try to assassinate the woman competitor, but they spoil they knock the wine out, and they just leave. They're just allowed to leave, even though the brother already got kidnapped. So the last 10 minutes served very little purpose.
He gets zapped, falls down in a room full of people, gets carried away. They run up, and they're allowed to walk away. They don't chase him down. The delay that they had on this film, and they must have, I don't know, when they did some rewrites, and I mean, this thing is edited like an old frickin' film strip, and some of the ends just don't match up.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit harder on that since they had additional time to tweak this or rewrite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Whatever you were going to do. But once that fails, Dumbledore brings Newt and Lolly back together and says two things. You got to rescue your brother and make sure that Grindelwald doesn't try another assassination. So in order to do that, he sends Lolly and Jacob to go at this dinner party, and he sends Newt into this dungeon that is not operated by the Ministry. This part's very, I spent this entire first half movie confused and questioning every decision because they go to the Ministry and they're like, oh, we have no record of your brother being arrested. The guys clearly walk by and no one tries to stop them, which makes me think that everyone in the Ministry is bought off by Grindelwald, but it's never emphatically said, so everyone just looks moronic. To quote Grimlock, my head hurts. My head hurts. So Newt goes into this dungeon. And he hands over two of his creatures, the stick one and the platypus.
Niffler.
So we actually get something pretty cute here where Newt has to do interpretive dance to rescue his brother. But I'm just...
Okay.
Go ahead.
This was enraging.
What?
I hated this. I fucking hated this. Like, it was so off-the-wall bonkers.
Yep.
But it's not like... You have to do that to do a trick or anything. Like, they just do it just to do it. Like, what was the point of this? You could just go along the wall. I hated that they fucking danced when he was dancing like this. It was so fucking stupid. There was no point to it. That's my point. Is that if you're going to do it, at least have, like, a point or a reason to do it. Or you're distracting somebody or something. They're not even doing it to distract. They're just doing it just across a fucking well or whatever this thing is.
It's so the creatures don't attack him and don't eat him. It shows that he's using what he knows as his role as a cryptozoologist and that he's able to interpret them to lead the way.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's the same way that you have to play dead to stop a bear. You have to adapt in order to survive, I guess. The reality is we have nothing for Newt's commander to do, so we have to artificially create scenes like this so he seems useful.
Let's just put it this way. You know, we've made so many goddamn Star Wars parallels. We'll never see Luke Skywalker do a waltz to distract the Emperor.
I'm pretty sure that was in one of the special editions. I could be wrong. Well, there's also, like, there's the garbage chute monster in here that just grabs people and eats them alive and pulls them back up.
Oh my gosh. Every now and then there's just a horror element that gets thrown in.
Yeah.
Because there's these light bugs, and it's one, I got to compliment the sound design. Huge in this movie.
Yes.
The sound design, the sound work put into it is great. I mean, the whole time he's walking, and you hear the tinking of those bugs in a glass, like you would actually hear when you trap a butterfly or something. I was actually impressed. But then they turn themselves off when this thing fucking strikes and takes out somebody and then spits them up, and these creatures just devour it like, well, let's go back to it, like the beginning of Jurassic World 2. It's just...
Yeah.
That one was off-putting. It was just like, oh, shit, we suddenly have some stakes out of nowhere.
I still question what this prison is for, because they're not in cells. They're, like, hung up on the wall. Fair game for this monster, and there's just one guy working the check-in desk.
This is not breaking into Lestrange's safe, that's for sure.
No, like, it's not Gringotts. It's not... Those Potter movies are so detailed, immersive in the world. Here, it's just... There is some imagination with the butterfly things that they use. But you're wizards with wands. Why can't you just say Lumos?
Lumos.
Fuck around with your light. We've already seen that done.
Well, the wand was taken away.
Oh, that's right. It was confiscated. I don't know. Pay the electric bill. one thing I saw in the trailer that infuriated me was the scene where we find out Dumbledore gives Jacob a wand. And this pissed me off because we were always told that the wand chooses the wizard, even though he's a muggle. It doesn't really have any magical abilities, but I like that Dumbledore gave him just a prop that he can't do anything with.
It's got no core. It's a fake wand.
And that leads to my idea of there's no point of having Jacob tag along other than to make him the fodder for this kind of joke.
So I crisis averted on that because Canon Queen was going to come out if he started using spells. That's all I was going to say. But his wand does come into effect because they go, him and Lolly go to this dinner party. Grindelwald's there with his hench people. Jacob pulls out his wand and they think he's a murderer. Tornado shows up. So Grindelwald now has an excuse to turn the wizards against the muggles because of one guy.
He sees this in a vision a little earlier, though, when he's driving there, because he's the whole time he's seeing these reflections in the mirror like he's fucking Stephen Grant in Moon Knight. But he's seeing these reflections of things that are going to happen. And one of them showed Jacob pointing a wand at him. So he's sitting at the table and he's sitting across from him and he's, I can't tell if he's winking at him or giving him little nods, but he's kind of just egging him on a little bit. You could kind of tell, just trying to get him to get up and do something.
That's true. See, I saw this movie a week ago and some of those details I just can't recollect because this movie is not very memorable. The stuff I remember is the stuff that I make fun of. Much like this game of, it's fucking Dr. Sleep with Credence and Aberforth talking with the window. It's the goddamn chalkboard.
Oh, it is. Oh, shit, you're right, it is.
Yep.
So is there a character that they have known nothing to do with or downgraded than Credence? Because he was sort of the tragic figure in the first movie. They set him up to be the big villain in the second one. And this one, he is an afterthought. He's got wizard cancer.
They keep changing what they want to do with it. You know, they should have left at the end of the first one.
Died.
Boom, and you could have done something else. Bringing it back in the second one was such a mistake. And then the very end of Albus Dumbledore is your brother was such a what the fuck? But no. See, this, I don't think she's got a plan. I really don't think she has a plan for these characters mapped out. There's no way. Because she's changing it as she goes. And you can't jazz your way through something like this. This isn't, you can't just, great, we're set in the roaring 20s, but you can't scat your way through this. You just can't.
It's the antithesis of the Potter books, where you can argue how much she had mapped out, but there's nothing she did in those Potter books that contradicted anything that was previously mentioned. This is like Rise of Skywalker, where they're just retconning everything.
Well, you mentioned in one of those early podcasts, Matt, that, you know, in the filming of those original set of films, like the first three or four films, she told them, okay, I will need you to do this, but she wouldn't give them a reason why, because that's the direction she was taking the character in the book, and she wanted to make it that much better when it appeared on screen. And so that proved that, yes, she did have a plan for those original books. But honestly, I honestly think that when she signed this contract to do these films, I think you guys are absolutely right. She has nothing mapped out. She has no idea where she's going to be taking these characters. And that's sad because a set of these characters, including Dumbledore, they're very beloved. And so why would you make this world and not take characters that are beloved and turn it into something magical? She can't do that. And I thought this was going to be changed with this movie. I honestly did. I didn't see the trailer for this, but I did think that maybe, just maybe, you know, she saw what happened with that second film and thought, maybe I shouldn't do the razzle-dazzle much. Maybe I should just do something to make us endear these people to these characters again because I've lost them. I don't see her gaining any more traction with fans with a film like this. I honestly don't.
The traction brings the movie eventually back up, though, because remember, Dumbledore is actually a character in this movie, everybody. His name's in the title, and he shows up to tell Newt, hey, glad you got your brother back. No time to chat now, Dr. Jones. I have to go fight my nephew. Because this is where it turns into the goddamn X-Men, where they're going into other dimensions.
Well, this is the mirror universe from Doctor Strange.
It's the mirror universe.
Yep.
And I said he's got Snape's wig. To go back to Star Wars, he's wearing Kylo Ren's wig. He looks like anorexic Kylo Ren, which I guess makes sense because he's got like wizard cancer because of the Obscurus.
He really does, and he looks creepy. I don't see any reason why this character is even here.
This scene that's up right here where, you know, he's clearly following him, I think it's wickedly imaginative that Albus blows on the glass. You see like a droplet. It turns, it spins, it hits Credence in the head, and we're in this other dimension. Visually, and even just the thought of how that was going to be done right here in broad daylight, but hidden from Muggles, I absolutely dug this huge. Problem is, I've had 2 months of trailers for Doctor Strange coming out next month, and it is so hard to get away from that, and we've seen it frequently. I wish there was a little more space, but seeing this in its own element, I really liked watching these two go at it. I really did.
So they have this nifty little fight. It's nice to actually have some action in an imaginative wizard battle, which neither of the previous two movies really did. Because it's always a big deal when Dumbledore actually does magic. On this scale, even though he's considerably younger here than he would be when he fights Voldemort later on. But he tells him that he is actually not his brother. He is the bastard child of his brother, so he's his nephew. And he's basically Joffrey Baratheon, or Jon Snow.
He is his father's brother's nephew's cousin's former roommate, is what he is. It's just as ridiculous.
Yeah, this is the consummate piece of her not having a plan, because this character has...
Exactly.
Yeah. This character has changed as many times as we have swapped Grindelwald actors. It's kind of insane, and he tells him, like, you know, I'm sorry, and he goes back to Grindelwald, and he starts to, like, maybe this guy is not such a good guy, he's been feeding me bullshit, which I would believe, because we then cut to him resurrecting the Chillin. I believe
Lazarus Pit?
We have never seen necromancy in Harry Potter up to this point, which is cool. You know, we're seeing, like, real dark magic. Because you would think this would be one of the unforgivable curses, resurrecting something from the dead.
Didn't even know it was possible.
Without a resurrection stone.
Yeah.
So, again, though, that makes that resurrection stone utterly pointless, though. You can already resurrect the dead. Why do you need this all-powerful stone to be the master of death?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This felt like something Johnny Depp would have just chewed the scenery in, bathing in blood with this CGI creature,
mm-hmm.
yelling credence.
Yeah,
I like that it's more reserved for as absurd as this context would lead you to believe. Meanwhile, which I feel like I should say throughout this entire movie because it jumps a lot. This movie was very tough to write a plot summary for the rest.
I did not envy you, sir.
They go back to Aberforth's bar together. They have dinner with the actual Chillin, cute little antics. Duke goes upstairs, sees the two Dumbledores talking to each other, walks out, and Albus tells him all the backstory. That if you're familiar with the books, you'll know where he talks about how his sister was killed in a crossfire between him and Grindelwald and Aberforth. That's what broke up their romantic friendship. I like that this is being referenced again, but it's also talked about in the last movie, so it's really not that much of a secret if you're paying attention.
I appreciated this a bunch, you know, having not read these books yet. I was about to start as well, Garrett, especially when you just started, and I was like, you know what, let me get through this movie, and then maybe I'll start going through the original books. My family's got me the screenplays for the first two of these as well, but I appreciated seeing this. A couple reasons. Jude Law, I mean, fantastic actor. So I really like the emotion that he brings to this because I fucking feel for him, you know. He feels broken. I mean, he has some good, fun spots, but at times we see a broken Dumbledore at moments, and this is one of them. But when he brings up that he doesn't know if he is the one that actually killed her with his own spell, oh, shit. That one just, like, that hurt. That hurt me.
As great as it is, it's the problem of Ewan McGregor in those Star Wars prequels where it's like, you're too good for this material.
Mm-hmm.
Or this scene feels so it stands out because it's so much better than everything else that's in this movie.
Yeah, but you could have said that about Gary Oldman in the other films too. You know, Gary Oldman could have said the exact same thing. I'm too good for these movies, but he knew where the paychecks were. And I think if you're going to get a gig like this, you might as well bring your best to it. I appreciate what Jude Law brought to this, and you know, I think eventually we should do, like, either for Patreon or something, a review of AI, because that's something I've always wanted to dive into, because I think he's fantastic in that movie. And I think that's where he really came into his own, was in that movie. And, of course, you know, a couple of things before that.
Well, he came into his own with Grindelwald, for the record.
Jesus Christ.
Bravo.
Well played, sir. Well played. I've admired the guy for so long. I just haven't seen him really have a role like this where he can actually be someone that is really good at chewing the scenery on screen in a good way, not just a hammy way.
Yeah.
And he's great. Every time he's on screen here, it's not as much as I was expecting, like I said earlier, but he's great every time he is on.
We have not mentioned Newt Scamander hardly at all.
I was just about ready to say that, dude. I was just about ready to say, is Newt Scamander in this? Because we've mentioned him going through one plot point after another. We haven't really mentioned him in this movie.
He does not stand out more than Jacob, more than his brother, more than Layla. He's one of the team.
Exactly. And, you know, does anybody remember that this guy won a fucking Oscar, you know, 6-7 years ago? Like, I just don't see this guy being a phenomenal actor in this. I really don't. He's not that good of a presence. Say what you will about those Hobbit movies, but Martin Freeman was really, really good in those. I'm watching these movies, and, you know, I didn't rewatch the first two for this, as I said, but I'm watching him in this, and it's just like he doesn't seem to belong here.
It's not a problem I have with the actor. It's that I just don't like the character of Newt Scamander. I especially don't get in the last two movies how he was such a poonhound. which also, I mean, Eddie Redmayne, like, I wouldn't call him unattractive, but there's something off. It's not a bias against gingers. It's not that. When you put him next to Jude Law, it's no contest. Like, give me a fucking break.
God damn, as a straight man on this podcast, I would go that way too, honestly.
See, and not only do I like Eddie Redmayne, but I like Newt, but that's, you know, that's me. What I noticed, and part of it's going to be because I just watched the other two, is he kind of, you know, he created a character that stood out in the first one, obviously. And then with the second one, he kind of took it even further in an obnoxious way. Like his gait, the way he walked, his body language seemed to be so exaggerated. Even his hair, like, was just longer and covered his face a little more, that it was just, I don't know, it felt too much. And I felt like he's dialed it back so that it's a better character, but it's still, like, I mean, look at when the title card comes up, it says in small letters, Fantastic Beasts, Secrets of Dumbledore. I hope he called the cops because his movie series got taken away from him. It got stolen right out from under his feet.
It's like Studio Star Wars. It's like Book of Boba Fett in that regard.
But, I mean, you know, if we're going to continue down a path to either meeting up with James and Lily, then we got to start deviating a little bit. And I do think if we're going to go that way, there's worse ways to do it than the way it's happening here.
Well, speaking of worst ways, they go to Hogwarts, and they have the balls to play the John Williams theme.
Yo.
I was like, you don't have, I don't care that this is a big franchise. You don't.
How dare you play this where he stood?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you haven't earned the right to play that in this fucking franchise. Like, although I do like seeing Jacob interact with the kids. They give him, like, cockroach candy.
Fucking Slytherin.
Of course, it's fucking Slytherin. McGonagall is there, but I'm glad that she's not part of this team because that would have made me cuss this movie out completely.
Yep, I thought they were going to. I thought the teachers that we know are there later on were going to be brought into this.
Well, there's only like three who could realistically be in this. But they decide that Grindelwald, they're going to have the election to where the chillin, whoever it bows to, because you have to be pure of heart, so the legend foretells, that is the person who will be elected the Grand Poobah of the Wizarding World. So they need to stop him. So what they do is Newt's assistant, Bunty, has his suitcase cloned. So everyone picks up a different suitcase that has the real chillin' inside, so the bad guys won't know who to get. Pretty inventive, but by the same token, I thought this was going to be the way to kill some of these characters off. Because there are way too many fucking characters in this series. I haven't mentioned Yusef being with Grindelwald this whole time because it doesn't fucking matter.
Nope. It mattered as much as Leta in the last movie.
It's really weird. The Potter films, you have all the side characters, but they're used so well. You know, characters like Neville or Luna.
They all have
a purpose. They all have a purpose, and they're all different in personality. Mm-hmm.
They are. I think they're used more sparingly. They kind of wrap around or they dip in and out. These ones, they're playing up pops throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just, hey, let's go meet up and then leave again. For some reason, they need to be there in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. Pick one. You don't need to be there at all the parts of the film. Can we say, and I was wondering, Matt, how did you feel that it was the rumor requirement?
I think that was fine.
It gave me a little, I took some giggle water when they, you know, walked in and I recognized that the door showed itself and they walked through. I was like, oh.
Although it's noticeably cleaner than it will be years later on.
Yeah, I did think we were going to get a reference to Order of the Phoenix, other than just the room. I thought he was going to mention the Order of the Phoenix.
So the reason they couldn't is the Order wasn't founded until Voldemort rose to power.
Oh, okay.
Initially.
The more I know.
Be about 60 years too early, at least.
About this point of the story is when they discovered that in order to go to where they need to go, they have to jump through the pages of these books that's spinning. I thought that was really cool. And, you know, I've given a lot of fault to Miss Rowling for a lot of the writing decisions that she made. But I think the idea of jumping into a book in order to go to a magical place is a great idea to plant into a kid's head. So I think this was actually a kind of cool plot device that I really liked.
I think I remember what you're talking about with the books. It's the...
Yep, that was a port key.
Yeah, no, but Lolly had books that they jumped into.
Yep, more than once.
Okay, that now it's all coming back to me. It only took a week.
and she makes a comment because he talks about, I think it was Dumbledore talks about a book she has, and it's, you know, you can find anything you ever need inside the pages of a good book. And, yeah, there's a nice little, if you're going to take something away from it, at least take that.
Yeah, that's consistent with Dumbledore in the past where he gave Harry the snitch, which he has in this movie.
Yeah, the snitch showed up, which, why the fuck, are kids really just flying everywhere when they're playing Quidditch? Are they not staying anywhere near the field? God damn it.
Yeah, because they showed just one kid on a broom by himself. That poor bastard, he has no friend.
Matt, let me ask you, as the big Potter fan, were you liking these references to the old series, or were you kind of hoping this would stand out on its own? Or did you think this was kind of the fan service that you kind of hate so much?
Those last 2 points. It reminded me of the last movie where they crowbarred Nicholas Flamel into the movie. Also, where the fuck did Nagini go?
That's right.
She was in the last movie and is nowhere to be seen here.
I'd rather see her stick around than the other random people he had with a little more writing. At least put her in the limo with him.
Yeah, because it's like, if you're going to go that far, at least use her more than name recognition. But yeah, I'm not crazy about all the references. I think, much like Star Wars, this world is so big, you don't have to keep going back to fucking Tatooine. I'm not saying Hogwarts is anywhere as bad as Tatooine, but it does feel like that. It's how many times can you show me that fucking castle and expect me to be amazed?
What I said in our first discussion with Fantastic Beasts is, hey, great, we get to see other countries, and we get to see, you know, we got to see, hear about Illimorny, we got to see Makusa. I guess technically we go to Germany, but why aren't we seeing some of these other places around the world? We get a couple shots in this movie, but that's it.
Especially because Grindelwald did not go to Hogwarts.
No?
Yeah.
He went to... Durmstrang, which is the school from Goblet of Fire, where all the guys walk in with their magic sticks, which I'm sure Grindelwald was
Dumbledore great. Found the magic stick.
Yeah, I know. Like, he used his other wand into Grindelwald's Chamber of Secrets. It's so easy to make these. I could do these jokes all day because they're more entertaining than this movie to be.
Sometimes you got to slither in.
So at least they go to Bataan, which is a new place we haven't seen before. In the Wizarding World, where they're basically on top of a mountain where the election's going to be held.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have to split up. They all fight different people with these suitcases.
I love this running around the city.
I do, too.
It was so fun. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
And then it kept going, and I'm like, you know what? I'm enjoying this. This is fun to watch.
And then Jacob wallops those two with the suitcase, too.
Yeah.
This was fun stuff.
And you know what it is? It's Thomas Crown Affair. The finale of that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
When they're going around and up and down, and they got the different suitcases, and it's, you might as well just kick on that music. And then there was I forgot to mention it, but there was a scene earlier, I think it was the fight that they had inside when they were in the German hall. And you realize at one point that the score, or maybe, no, it's here, when there's a little bit of a fight going on, the score drops away completely. And it's all sound effect, and it's the Star Wars moment. It's the Star Wars scene, where for one scene, there's no score, and it's all sound mix, sound effect. And you hear, I think it's when Theseus and the one that recruited Jacob, when they're fighting, and it's great sounds, and they kick ass to everything, and you hear every tink of, like, balls going down and falling down the stairs. Every now and then you get these scenes that are just really, really well done. The connective tissue isn't great. You know, the gristle is needs to be cut off. But some of these scenes are really enjoyable, and this was a good one.
Well, it's the only scenes that are directed with any sort of flair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was actually fun and inventive, especially with how the two of them, I don't know if they use marbles or something that, like, explode. So they can get out of there. I don't remember exactly. There was some imagination put into that, which a lot of this movie is lacking. Little fun details that make the world feel more exciting. So they get to the top of the mountain, and the Chilin, the Hexed One, bows in front of Grindelwald. So you think he's going to be deemed Grand Poobah, but all of a sudden Newt shows up with the real Chilin, and Grindelwald says it's fake news.
Oh my God!
I did not lose
was...
the election. I won it fair. Won it very fair.
I'm sure they're nice people. I'm sure they're fantastic people.
Like you mentioned, Matt. I mean, the Potter books. I guess there was a trial in one of the books and movies, but for the most part, we've kind of stayed away from this stuff. Did we need this?
Well,
is this the kind of character Grindelwald really is?
Yes, to a point, because he's very charismatic. And okay. I think the only way to justify a wizard in war like this would be from the political angle, where you get extremists riled up. Given the time period, it's obvious. But there was the last Harry Potter movie had a lot of Nazi parallels when the Voldemort's group took over the ministry. So it's not unprecedented. I just wish the subtext, if you can even call it that, wasn't as blatant as it is here.
And you could do it with little changes, though. I mean, you don't have to have a vote go one way just to turn around and do the vote the other way. Just reveal that what he brought was fake, and then it's magic. You could have had somebody there find out that Chilling was reborn with death magic or something. There's ways to do it without making it such a, fuck, you know what, we don't need this right now.
Is there a way that you could have proved that it was actually hexed?
Yes, magic. Because then at the end, really, it's just like, I mean, really, all you get is, no, this is a real one. And then he's like, no, this is a real one. No, this is a real one. Okay, that's the real one. It's still, wait, why did we choose this is the real one instead of that's the real one?
Ah. Yeah, here's where the movie starts to slog to the crawl to the finish line. Queenie has a change of heart. Credence also has a change of heart. Grindelwald openly declares war on the Muggles. He tortures Jacob with the Cruciatus Curse, which is would automatically send him to prison back at this time. So, the Chilling. I do love how it bows to Dumbledore first. And Dumbledore's like, no, I'm good. I got this. Because one thing I do love about this movie, even back in his youth, Dumbledore is a manipulative son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
It's a dick, even then.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we were saying in all those podcasts. Yeah. And she's consistent with that in this film.
So Grindelwald says, all right, I'm going to kill Credence finally, and I was cheering him on the whole time. But this fight is what breaks the blood pact, and I honestly thought we would have come up with something more clever than just their spells cancel each other out.
Waving wands, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Across the streams joke.
You know what it feels like, Matt? It feels like we're saving it. We have two more films to do, so let's just save it.
Yeah, but here's the problem. I have to compare it to Harry Potter just because...
Of course.
When you had Dumbledore fighting Voldemort in the fifth one, it's like on the scale we've never seen up to that point. Mm-hmm. Even though this ends in a standstill like much like that one did, you could have come up with something a lot more bombastic than this for the climax of your movie. Because all three of these movies are really anticlimactic. This one ends with a speech. The last one ended with a speech at a rally. And the first one ended with Johnny Depp showing up and all of us laughing audibly.
You're right. But that I think that comes from the fact that J.K. Rowling is not a screenwriter. And all she's doing is setting stuff up.
I think we've complained about a lot of, at least I've complained, I think, about a lot of the endings of a lot of these films in all of this series. I know there was one with the... in the part of where they were like walking off into the woods, just kind of like, we're going to have a great day. Freeze frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think she's got a harder time writing adult characters than she does children's characters.
Well, yeah. In fact, in the years since, she has tried writing an adult book and it failed. It didn't sell anything because she does have problems writing adult characters.
In those books. And I,
you know,
And I don't want to demean it by calling them children's books. I don't mean that as pejorative. I mean that as that's where they're designed. And I think she writes, from everything I know, because my kids devour those books. We talked about it when we went through the first set, go through and listen to those. Mm-hmm. And I think she writes those really well from everything I understand. I think she can write adult characters. And I think that is so much of the problem here.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a contributing factor, perhaps, to why these movies don't have the magic that those ones did, among other reasons. So Grindelwald evades arrest, he escapes, says, I'll get you next time, Gadget. And
damn it.
They cut to Credence, because he doesn't even get a dignified death on screen. He's going to die off screen in between.
Oh, he's dying and off screen. He's never coming back.
Especially with his legal troubles right now, there's no way we're seeing him again.
No, we're not going to see him in his own freaking Flash movie next year.
So then I thought the movie was done. I got out of my seat. I'm like, all right, well, that's it. But no, we got an epilogue. so to speak, where Jacob and Queenie are finally going to get married. Enjoy Catherine Waterston. This is her one appearance in this movie.
She showed up in the Ministry of the U.S. Ministry of Magic for a quick shot at a green screen. I thought that was all we were going to get.
I was like, oh, wow, that's it.
It did not look like her at first. I swear they posted her head on somebody else's figure.
It looked like frickin' when they put Philip Seymour Hoffman into the last Hunger Games movie after he had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like a Force ghost, kind of how she looked when she showed up. Like, she's literally a Phantom Menace.
I thought this scene was cute to end on, though. I'm not going to fault the end of this movie, the very final.
So this felt like a reshoot to me, because this is the way you both can end this as a trilogy, so to speak, and leave room for it to continue. Whereas if they kept the ending of Grindelwald just leaving, it would not bode well as a quote-unquote endpoint.
But I do like how Dumbledore's kind of looking at it from afar. He's kind of giving them their moments, and this is a really sweet way to end a not-so-sweet movie.
Dumbledore on that bench, that street, every time we're here, it is shot beautifully. It looks amazing.
It is.
It really, really is. And I love Dumbledore on this bench, and him. He's separate from them. He's not one of them, and he's not going to let himself be one of them either. You know, even when he's invited, he's not one of the team. It's a weird feeling. I kind of get some sorrowfulness for him in that moment. Like, he doesn't even feel like he can go participate in that celebration. He won't let himself.
Which is in tune with the character. So, like, he's definitely consistent as far as how he's written. But he does walk off into the night as a way to close the movie. Yeah, I think it was neat that they finally got married. I just think they did way too much maneuvering to get to this point. Across all three movies. We could have gotten here a hell of a lot sooner.
You're right.
And I say that for a movie that's 140 minutes, and it does feel that length, I am not going to lie.
I won't lie. I was checking my watch the last 15 or so minutes of this film. And I think we've said that with a lot of these Potter films is, God damn, you could have cut at least 20 minutes out of this.
So that'll conclude Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore. Will it conclude the series? Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But let's go into our final thoughts and our scores. So I'm going to go to Garrett first. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give Fantastic Beasts 3?
Well, to quote a band that one of these characters is named after, this movie felt like a bad Moon Rising. It felt like it just couldn't get its footing. And every time I wanted to like it, it does something that just threw me completely off. The writing in this, I thought Steve Kloves could streamline this. And the scary part is he probably did, which scares me to think what we could have gotten if he hadn't jumped on the board of this film. I said at the beginning of this movie I liked it better than the second movie, and I do. I think there are some great effects here. I think they're used very well. I think there are some good messages here. I think Jude Law was a revelation. I really, really enjoyed him as Dumbledore, the most I've enjoyed him in this series. But the main character of this series, I can't get a grasp on. I'm pretty sure it's Newt Scamander, and he just doesn't feel like a really important part of this world as much as she wants us to believe. It's more enjoyable than the second film. I think it was well worth the matinee price I paid for this, but I wouldn't pay more than the matinee price to see this. So I will go 6.5 out of 10.
Well, 6.5 is actually higher than I thought you were going to go based on your conversing. Adam, what about you, sir?
Okay, so going into this one, I had some trepidation because as much as I really enjoy the first Fantastic Beasts, I loathe the second one, and not just from what it didn't do movie-wise, but for what it did to characters that I cared about as much as I can care about fictional characters. It fixed a lot of that in this, sloppy as it could be at times. The reunification of Queenie and Jacob, which happens towards the end of this movie, it got me choked up. Not teary, but I was so fucking happy for those characters because I love Jacob. He's my avatar in this world. I didn't like what they did Queenie in the last one. I didn't like her for half of this movie because it's obvious where she's going to go. She was either going to be killed or return to Jacob. So there wasn't a surprise, but I was so happy to see that happen. Dumbledore is fantastic. Jude Law is amazing. I don't know how he's going to age 400 years in the next 60 years, but I guess we're going to see that. Mads Mikkelsen, fantastic as Grindelwald. He brings a menace from a physical standpoint that Johnny Depp couldn't, but as Garrett mentioned, some of the scenes, some of the political intrigue type scenes, Depp would have fucking chewed the scenery with, but that part is what it is. This series is steering away from Newt, and if they're going to do that, they need to just do it and have him be a full supporting character in his own story. And they need to shit or get off the pot, maybe with Warner Brothers' new company that they've created. that's what we're going to get. I don't know if we're going to get two more movies. I think we are going to get one more, and it may be just a wrap-up 10 years in the future and we get the Wizarding War. I like a lot of this film. The things that bug me in it are things that I can gloss over for the most part because it felt a lot more breezy to me than it did my co-host. I didn't really feel the length other than the fact that I had a large vanilla cherry Coke and I needed to pee twice throughout this movie. But the rest of it, I didn't have an issue with time-wise. Yes, you could have easily cut a half an hour out of this movie, and much like the Star Wars prequels, how there's a good movie and a half out of those three, in these three movies, there's a good movie and a half out of these as well. But I like it for what it is. I'd be happy to see it again. I like the new character that we got. I don't give two bleeps about Newt's brother. I don't think he needed to be here. But Lally Hicks was fun every time she was on screen. I would like to see her back quite a bit more. I don't think she will. Catherine Watterson, I guess they got her back after COVID because no reason for her to be there. But Jacob and Queenie are married. Made me really happy. I thought it ended well, and I think that's going to help my overall end of the score. Shot beautifully, sounded beautifully, scored beautifully. The writing's just, it's not what we got out of the Harry Potter movies. The rest of it, though, I like the way it looks. I'm good at a 7. I don't know if it'll go up and down or subsequent watches. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. I told Laura, my wife, that we're going to go see it together because these are at least characters I care about. And I'm happy they were done better this time than last time. I'm staking on a 7.
Here's the review I've been waiting for.
You're going to keep waiting, unfortunately, because I do have some thoughts before I give my number.
All right.
I do think this is an improvement over the last movie, but not enough to where I can say I'm looking forward to future installments if they indeed happen. The fundamental problem I have with all three of these movies is what I mentioned earlier, is that I don't know who they're for. As a Potter enthusiast, I find the new characters not that interesting, and I find all the callbacks annoying. As a fantasy series, they're often too bogged down in contemporary parallels for me to get immersed in this world that they're creating. These characters, I think they're played well. I don't think there's anyone who's objectively terrible as a performer, unlike, the Star Wars prequels, where I think there's some people that are just god-awful. This doesn't have that problem, but I think it does have a similar problem with tone and a similar problem with the overemphasizing political intrigue. If I gave the last movie a 3, which is what I did, I am not going to go anywhere near as low as I did that. But I did give the first movie a 6, and I don't think it's as good as that. So I'm going to land on a 5. I think this is, it's a decent movie, is all I can say. It's the kind of blockbuster that makes me disappointed in popcorn entertainment because I've seen a hell of a lot better, but I've seen a hell of a lot worse. And I'd rather watch a big swing than something that's kind of safe and is more designed just to get the ball rolling for future installments than anything else. So mm-hmm. I didn't hate it by any means, but I can't say that I'm dying to rewatch it. So I'm going to land on a 5. It is what it is. I'm of two minds about it.
My big complaint about with this series is, unlike the first few of the Potter series, I don't feel like these are all one contained film. And I think the fact that I didn't watch those first two before this really hurt me because there are times when I was kind of lost in this. And I've said over and over, I like movies to be self-contained. I like there to be a beginning, a middle, and end in the film, not a beginning, middle, and end of the series. And I didn't feel that in this at all. I felt there were times when I just wish I would have known exactly what these characters' drives were because I didn't get it in the other films and I didn't feel it here.
That is a benefit, I think, not only the way that the Potter films are, the books are written, the films are done, is you kind of got a set time frame. You know when you're going in, you know what each film is going to be until you get to the last ones. But you at least go in, you have your frame of mind. You have your space, your time, your characters, and you know that going in. You know, you can wrap your story around that when you go in with the knowledge of the other parts. They still got to do a lot of setup here. They haven't built a foundation that's solid storytelling yet.
Well, speaking of what's going to be built, as of today, there is no script written for a fourth movie, and Variety reported that Warner Brothers will only greenlight the future installments depending on how this movie does commercially, which as of now, it just made back its money, but you got to make at least twice that to break even counting marketing. So I honestly don't think we're going to see this series play out, certainly not until Warner Brothers' new hierarchy is restructured, and I think they're going to start with DC first and getting that situated before touching Potter. So what do you guys think?
See, it's tough. I think it's possible. One of the issues that this series has now is so much of the marketplace is international and certain markets that don't touch movies that do magic because of certain beliefs. And if you don't earn in the U.S. and a few of the Euro markets, you're kind of screwed. Marvel has done a take the political side out of it because they censor themselves outside of the U.S. to appease certain masters, but they know that they're going to get $500 million for censoring the content to do so. You can't really take the gay content out of this film to sell it to China. You're not going to do that. So I think they're going to have a hard time earning enough to do so. But with Warner Brothers Discovery being such a new, I mean, it's massive. I follow the deal. When you look at what their market cap is, I mean, it's a massive, massive company. And if it's not more Fantastic Beasts films, we're going to get something else in the wizarding world, if for no other reason than to keep the theme parks rolling in merchandise. But I would like to at least see this get wrapped up. I would like to see the Wizarding War.
You know, in watching that 20th anniversary special, I got the feeling that that was kind of a goodbye to the Harry Potter series. I think if they don't sell this thing off, they could branch off into a TV show. I think I could see this going to Netflix for a set of shows that we were kind of promised with the Divergent series
HBO
a number
Max.
Of years ago. Yeah, HBO Max. Yeah, good point. I could see them going to HBO Max with a TV series or something that continues the world. But if you're going to pump $200 million into this thing and you're not even going to barely make your money back, there's a problem with that. And I think a lot of it has to do with the bad press that J.K. Rowling's gotten since that second film. And I think a lot of it's had to do with the reception that these Fantastic Beasts films have gotten. Because, you know, if I have a Harry Potter film on this podcast, a good friend of mine who has devoured these books as a kid and even he's disappointed by what she's turned out, there's a big, big problem here. And I think if Steve Kloves can't come in and rescue it, if we've had the same team behind this thing the entire time, change teams, change studios, see where you could take it, or write more books. But I don't know if you'll be able to get a big, big budget together and put something like this out again, because it's just been one diminishing return after another. And I don't know, I think the Wizarding World might be about ready to close, with the exception, as Adam said, of those theme parks, which I still haven't gone to and I plan to.
And I had a great experience recently when I went. Amazing time, enough that when we went into Ollivander's, my daughter was chosen to be chosen for a wand. Holy crap. You want to talk about an emotional, amazing moment? When you're in there and you look over and your wife has got tears streaming down her face and your daughter is beaming, looking up while they're explaining why this wand chose her, magical. And I don't mean that as a pun, but it is absolutely magical. And they walk out with that same wand, which then dad pays $69.99 for. But they walk out with the same wand, you know, that chooses them. They've got something magical there. They've got to keep it going because it's a wonderful experience. Like, they've found a way that you can physically be in this world. Do you think writing, directing changes would help this going forward, or do you think it would be a completely different spinoff?
I want to see another director come in and take a stab at this.
Yes, I would love that, too.
I mean, six or seven films ago, Guillermo del Toro was set to do one of these. And he backed out and gave it to Alfonso Cuarón. Give him involved somehow. Give it to somebody who has a proven creative hand. This David Yates, yeah, he's directed some very, very successful films. All in this franchise, by the way. He tried Tarzan, which completely flopped. Get it out of his hands. I agree with you, Matt. And to go off what you were saying about that experience at the park, Adam, I mean, that's a complete heartwarming story, because I can't think of it in terms of what would happen if I were to do it. Because honestly, and we mentioned this in that previous series, this came out when I was in my early 20s. I was so past wanting a world like this. I couldn't immerse myself in it. But I'm thinking about it like, what if I were a kid and I was chosen to be a Jedi and given a lightsaber?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what the equivalent is. And Matt, we've made that comparison to Star Wars a lot just because of the cultural impact that this series has had. It was a global phenomenon, and I'm seeing it kind of diminish more and more. And how much blood can you get from this stone? How long can you do this before it finally gets to the point where nobody goes? I don't want the answer to that question. I want them to find a way to continue it, but at the same time, I want somebody else behind the helm, because this world just doesn't feel as consistent as it should.
No, it does not. So I'm curious to see where it goes from here, just like all the stuff we have upcoming on this site. So now that we've come back and we've returned to this series and are sort of putting it back to bed until the future comes up, Garrett, what's next on the horizon for us?
Well, what's next is something else has hit HBO Max in the last few days, and that has been the new Batman movie starring Robert Pattinson. And the boys on this site have been bugging me for years to do Batman. The unfortunate thing about doing Batman at Binge was that I'd already done it, and we kind of did a condensed version, and I'm not faulting Jack for that at all, but I was not proud of the way those shows had come out. So we are going to do it proper. The three of us are going to get together, and we're going to review the 66 Batman with Adam West and Burt Ward, the Tim Burton Batmans with Michael Keaton, and we're going to do the Joel Schumacher movies. We are going to do Catwoman because that's part of the world as well, and we are going to cover, that's a part of it as well, sir. Yes, you did. And we are going to do the Snyderverse version of Batman as well. There are other things to cover, obviously, Suicide Squad and all that, but we're going to get to that at a later date. But I want to get Batman out of the way because it's something that these guys have been bugging me for forever, and I've been wanting to do for a long time. And, you know, just a little bit of a spoiler alert, we've recorded four of those shows at this point, and they have all been very, very... They're exactly what you expect from the three of us, I believe. And the fact that we've launched this thing, we finally got it out in the stratosphere. This is our opening show to, after the intro. This is our opening show to our world, so to speak. Plus, Matt and I, we've been recording with Mike Ganeri. That series has been fun to do as well. So there are a lot of things coming down the pike, and yes, we are going to continue certain series with certain people. It's so much fun to actually get back in the podcasting game, and I'm excited with what's coming down on the horizon.
A lot coming on the horizon, but let's see what happens with the Wizarding World. Thank you, boys, for joining me once again, raising our wands. But until next time, podcasts that seem unimaginable today will seem inevitable tomorrow. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
What is this place?
The room we require.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, and Adam.
You should consider our efforts a success, Mr. Kowalski.
Voice narration by Adam.
It's really quite beautiful, you have to admit.
Edited by Garrett.
Can you tell which one is yours?
No.
Good, I'd be worried if you could.
Things are not quite what they appear.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is for review and discussion, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
Never mind, it's a muggle thing.
We're good on that.
I got my stats, got my plot summary in quotes.
Good luck with that, sir.
Yeah, I know. So, oh God, we have so much to talk about. So let's.
So much.
So let's get the shindig going. Give me a countdown, and we'll return to the wizarding world.
They go into the quote-unquote relationship between him and
Grindelwald.
Thank you. They go into the relationship between him and Grindelwald.
And Jacob's there. So Dumbledore basically tells them, oh, and Newt's assistant is here, who I enjoy seeing. What the hell's our character's name?
I keep wanting to say Bonnie, but I know that's not it.
Bunty.
Bunty.
They're all on the boat. I was going to say on the boat, because I just watched Death on the Nile. And he hands over his two of his creatures, the stick one and the platypus.
Niffler.
Niffler.
Sorry.
Jesus, Adam. Which one's the fan here?
I have a statue of Niffler, and I have a statue of Bowtrickle.
Wow.
I'm looking right now at my statue of Hedwig saying, I'm so, so sorry. It's literally staring at me right now, just hanging for head and shitting him.
The sound design, the sound work put into it is great. I mean, the whole time he's walking through. Sorry, Matt. And
and he's great every time he's on screen here. It's not as much as I was expecting, like I said earlier, but he's great every time he is on.
Yeah, you're the only person who likes that King Arthur movie he was in.
I did like that movie. Yeah,
is he in that one?
He's a villain.
He is, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
That is his Jupiter Ascending.
Yep, it is.
I've been a fan back to Existence, so that, Repo Men, I'll watch them all.
I think Gattaca was the first thing I saw.
Gattaca is so, it's phenomenal. I watched that movie once.
Adam's been endorsing that movie since we saw it in fucking theaters together all those years ago.
Even to the Sherlock Holmes movies he did, because I like him in those.
Never seen those.
Well, we'd have to do a series. Say what you will about those Hobbit movies. What was the name of the actor who played the lead Hobbit? Yeah. Say what you will about those Hobbit movies, but Martin Freeman was really, really good in those. I want somebody else behind the helm because this world just doesn't feel as consistent as it should.
No, it does not. And we shall see what the future of the Wizarding World comes. Very poor choice of words given. but yeah, so I'm curious to see.